Welcome back, and I will be back here in the Coast to Coast AM air chair again Sunday night into Monday morning. I guess I'll keep dragging me back until I get it right. First hour, Mike Lindell, the inventor of the popular My Pillow, tells his rags to riches story, including his battle with crack cocaine. Then former NASA employee, scientist Josiah Zehner. He's the first known person to have edited his own DNA in an effort to make himself superhuman. I look forward with great anticipation to both of those conversations, and I hope you'll be along for the ride. When we come back, more of my conversation with Craig Hamilton Parker, British psychic medium, and we'll continue to delve into this remarkable mystic journey to India and the Nadi Leaf Oracle. Stay tuned right here on Coast to Coast AM. British psychic medium Craig Hamilton Parker is with us here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about the Nadi Leaf Oracle. So, before the break, Craig, you were explaining that you had contacted someone who was able to obtain a an actual, real copy, or not a copy, but an actual Nadi Leaf Oracle, and that you set this meeting up on Skype. You didn't divulge your real name in order to sort of test the veracity of this leaf oracle. Now, before we went away to break, you were explaining what this oracle works and how you had to submit your thumbprint. That's how they identify whether or not you have a leaf in the oracle, correct?
Right. All he had is my thumbprint. Nothing else to go on. Okay, so then we decide to connect, and we made the connection to southern India. And then what happens was you have this pile of, like I said, it's like a Venetian blind, it looks like, of leaves, of wooden sort of leaves from the oracle, made on palm leaves. And he goes through, the thumbprint helps him find your pile, and in that pile is your leaf. So you then have to start the laborious process of going through the leaves to find your leaf. So he look at the first leaf and say, you export precious metals for a living? No. You have just had a hospital operation? No. You have just bought three houses? No. So there are all sort of very specific things. I was thinking, okay, here we go. Is this going to be some sort of form of cold reading? You know, they're going to feed me back information that I say. So I was only going to say yes and no, nothing more. And of course, there were just weird questions. They were just some bizarre sort of things. And he starts going through these things. There was nothing there that was sort of leading questions or anything. We're just rejecting each leaf as we went through. And then finally, he comes to the leaf and says, "Your first wife's name was Tina." Yes, that's correct. Okay. I thought, well, that's interesting because, first of all, nothing on the internet about that. I don't make any noise about the fact that I've been married before or my first wife's name. And then he looks at the next line. Your present wife's name is Jane. Yes, that's correct. Your mother's name is Ethel. Yes. Your father's name is Dunild. You know, they were saying it in an Indian accent, actually.
Right, right.
I go, blimey, yes, correct.
And again, we should remind listeners that the person on the other end who has in their possession the leaf oracle, they don't know your real name. They don't know anything about your identity. You've hidden that from them.
Absolutely went to extreme lengths to make sure that he could find nothing out about me, right? And then he starts firing off all the things about my life. You know, you used to be an artist. Yes, I did. You know, your father used to work in the tax office. Now, that was one that really blew me away because only I knew that. My brother didn't even know that my dad's first job he had was in the tax office, you know? Even though I always knew my dad as a teacher and a restaurateur later in his life, but not in the tax office. And he was firing away at things like this and told about things I'd done in my life, books I'd written, and all these things. And he said your brother's name, he said your brother's wife's name, the sister's name, who had children, operations that had been done in people, illnesses that had happened, one thing after another, after another, after another. And we went through all this whole load of things. And then eventually he comes to the things, and your name, which is kind of the conclusion of it, is Craig. I go, yes. And you were born on the 24th of January, 1954. Yes. were born at 1:30 in the morning. Yes. How on earth did he know that?
I'm not 100% accuracy. 100%.
Not a single question, not a single thing that he said on there was wrong. It was 100% with the weirdest of facts that you couldn't possibly, some of which only I knew, you know?
Well, how many, said, I have to ask you, Craig, how many,
my wife Jane was saying, he must have looked it up, he must have, he said, your wife has a rash on her leg at the moment. I said, that's the only thing that's wrong, Jane. She said, and she pulled up her slacks he had on, said, look at that, I'm covered in a rash. Mm. I didn't even know that, you know?
Right, right. Now, how many pages are in this oracle?
Well, there's 7 pages for each person. There's sections called candams, but it's written in tiny, tiny little Tamil writing, and you can access more. And actually, the funny thing is, the oracle, you see, I didn't just trust this, you see, before the readers start saying, oh, there must be a con here somewhere. I saw 2 more readers through my original contact, and they all said the same thing. And then I met a professor who had been studying this in Denmark for years, and he'd done 30 years of research into this. And I made contact with him and asked him what he said, what he thought. And he said, well, let me see if I can find you an oracle. And he put me in touch with 2 more who all said the same thing. It's slightly different ways, worded slightly differently, because it would be, some of them were like, it was done as a conversation between Shiva and Pravati and things like this. But all the same information was there and more. And this is the leaf. That finds my leaf. That's just the beginning.
Right, but I have so many questions about this. Again, it's the Nadi Leaf Oracle, NAADI, the Nadi Leaf Oracle. How come you get 7 pages in the Oracle? What's so special about you, Craig?
Well, the Oracle is supposed to be there for every person that consults it. Not every person in the world, every person that consults it, every person that ever actually finds it and will find the Oracle, there's a page for it. And one of the meanings of the word Nadi is to seek. So you have to seek this oracle. It's not something you can just sort of say, oh, give us a reading. You have to find your oracle. You have to find your leaf.
So if I were to seek the Nadi oracle and I had someone on the other end, there would be guaranteed 7 pages about me or not necessarily so?
I'm saying I believe the 7 for each person, because what happens is the oracle starts to change over a period of time. You see, it makes a prediction. Now, the second section of looking at the oracle, because we did as a second section, it tells you what will happen in your life, good and bad. And here's the rub. It even tells you the day you will die. So you've got to be prepared to take on some pretty heavy stuff. It tells you incurable illnesses and things like this. You know? Now, once you're armed with this information, you know, you can see what it, for me, it was a revelation, because it showed me exactly what I should be doing in my life. I was at a real crossroads at the time. I had a lot of problems with Google messing up my website for me and pulling me off the search results. I thought I'd had enough of writing at that particular time. And I was beginning to think, what do I do with my life? How's the best way I can work with this mediumship and so forth, so it can be really help people, you know, and it gave me all that, and it showed me everything I should do and how I could work. And the most important thing for me, it told me that I could work as a charitable trust. And I thought, yes, I'm going to work for charity with this. You know, I'm going to do this just to help people, and we're going to put all this money and do some good with it and feed people in India, right, and so on. Another thing, I can tell you about that later.
So it tells you your destiny.
But it told me my destiny, and it gave me what they call remedies. Ways you can change the karma. You see, the Indian idea is that it tells you about your past lives. So it revealed my past lives, good and bad. And in those past lives, it said, you did this and you did that. And you did this, and I did good things and I did negative things. And it said, to get rid of this negative karma, you have to do these spiritual remedies. Now, some of those I could do in the UK. But some of them meant I had to go to India to do this, because I had to go to specific temples. I had to meet special holy men. I had to do special fire rituals and things like this that would clear the negative energy. Now, I'm not from a Hindu background or anything like that, But when you get such specific information, I think, my God, I'm going to go and do these remedies. What have I got to lose? You know.
Well, not to would be to deny your destiny and might be inviting bad karma, I would think.
Well, yeah, possibly, yes. I mean, it would probably work out as it's been told. But you can avoid that. You can increase the good and you can negate the bad by doing the rituals. And those, one of the things those rituals included, which I really liked the idea of, is to do real charitable work. So one of the things I had to do was to buy someone in India a cow and a calf and to feed people in mental asylums, okay? Mm-hmm. So it was all written down there. So I decided I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to do these remedies. And I booked a flight to India to go into the middle of India where I knew nobody to do these oracles and to see if I could somehow do these rituals.
Do you have to do the journey alone?
Well, initially that's what it seemed to be. But then my friend from Denmark said, well, I can put you in touch with two Nadi readers there who will take you around and help you do that. And they'll take you to all the places you need to go in India and help you find it where you can show you how to do the rituals. Brilliant. Could do that. And I thought, this is just too good an adventure. This is Indiana Jones, you know. I'm going off to do something. And I wish someone would come with me. And my friend, Louis Frost, is a film producer. He only does small films, but, you know, guerrilla sort of film type things. And I said, Louis, do you have a cameraman that could come with me? Do you think we could film this? And he said, yeah, well, I'll see what I can do. And we found a cameraman, a young fella, you know, got on well with him immediately. I said, come with me, and let's see if we can film it. And he got a high-quality camera, Red, they call it.
Red camera, that's the best, yeah.
Real good one, right? And some other ones for doing the faster scenes. And said, look, I'll come with you. We haven't got any sound recorders. I don't know where we're going to go. I have no idea what places we're going to be at, but I know we're going to be in the middle of nowhere. We're going to be searching down holy men. And I said, but maybe we can make this into a film as we do it. So he agreed to come along, and I managed to capture it all on camera, which I've made into a movie called Mystic Journey to India, which has now just this week gone onto Amazon, so people could actually see this, see what happened on video. But and it was all professionally put together because Louis was able to edit it all, and we actually captured it all, most of it, but some of it was just happening so fast. For example, one of the most incredible things, it said in the oracle, now we had to go to various holy places around India. And these were beautiful places and such mind-opening places anyway. But one of the things it said, Mr. Prakash, who became my Nadi guide through it, he said, well, now we have to find holy man. I go, okay, yeah. And he said in the oracle where it would be. The oracle, he looked at the almanac, and we got to get there at such and such a time when Mercury's in this position. Okay. So he was kind of using his almanac and the Nadi leaves as a sort of sat-nav. So we headed off through swamps and down dust roads into the middle of nowhere, up a hill, and then just as we're going up this hill, a dusty hill high up in the Himalaya, high up in the Indian, South Indian mountains, the car breaks down, bang. And we step out the car and think, where's this holy man? And as we stepped out the car, the holy man stepped out of the bushes behind us. He was all covered in ash. His eyes are sort of red, almost demonic red eyes he had. And this man apparently, because I found out later, sleeps in a fire. He doesn't just walk through fire. He lays down and can sleep in a fire. He's what they call a siddha yogi.
He sleeps all night in burning embers.
Not all night, but he will lay down and sleep in a fire in front of his devotees, apparently. You know?
Have you witnessed this?
No, did? I didn't witness it.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
But my God, what an interesting, strange man. All his hair is like it looks like Marge Simpson haircut, you know? It's all matted with dirt and, you know, it was like, oh my God, here I am. Look, I can't believe what I'm looking at. So I follow him, right, and I follow through it. And we walk up this hill, up this dusty hill, to this temple on top of the hill. And he hadn't apparently appeared there for over a year. And at that very moment, he stepped out and walked into the temple. The very moment that Nadi said to be in that place at that time, right?
He was expecting you.
It was the Nadi. Someone 5,000 years ago knew of that very moment that I would follow that man. You know, that very, you can imagine what that does to your head.
What did he tell you?
Well, eventually we had to follow him around the temple, and all this banging goes on, and he goes around all these shrines and things and starts doing all these rituals with fire going everywhere. It was a real amazing eye candy thing to watch. You know, my cameraman friend was just going, "This is incredible." You know? But then we filled us all over, about to go, and someone comes up and grabs me by the arm. "He wants to see you. He wants to see you." And he pulled me over by my arm to see him. And he stood up on a sort of a level slightly above me, and you kneel down and touch his feet. And then he starts spouting off in Tamil about all these things, you know, as if not looking at me, just talking in Tamil, right? So I didn't understand what he said. And when finished and came away from him, I asked, what was all that about? And what did he say? Well, then Mr. Prakash then translated through his friend. Now, it's quite difficult. Getting the translations is difficult because the Indian language is so hard to hear sometimes. But what he basically said was the same predictions that had been said in the Nadi Oracle. I couldn't believe it. I was getting confirmation now from, and what he was saying was the things that were said in the very first Nadi Oracle, something that Mr. Prakash, who was with me, knew nothing about. So I was getting confirmation from the first, I said I did it in two lots, and the first that came from the very first reading. Oh, blimey. You know, not only has the Nadi told me to do this and what's right. going to happen, but I now get a holy man telling me all about it too.
I got to ask you, Craig, this is incredible, but I have to ask you about the date of your death. I'm not going to ask you to divulge it, but... I'm hoping that it's a long ways into the future.
Well, it's not round the corner, thank goodness.
Yes, you live to a ripe old age.
It does a funny thing to you, it's a bit, I think it's in the story of Sparta, I think there's a story where someone in Sparta is told by the gods the day he will die, so it becomes fearless in battle, right? And
right.
It kind of gives you this fearlessness in a way, in a funny sort of way, because you know that's when your time's going to come. You think, well, it's not going to come till then, so I'll be fearless with life. And the strange thing is, though, I told you that because I wanted to test this oracle, I tested it a number of different times, and in the end ended up talking to a number of different readers I tracked down through these people and connections I had in India. But as you do these rituals, because I did the rituals in the stages, as you do the rituals, the next time I approached the oracles, it said, "You have done the rituals, you have done the remedies, your date of death has shifted 5 years further."
Ah.
You've gained 5 years.
Interesting.
Now, I didn't expect that. But apparently, the thumbprint itself has these little dots on it. And those dots even change as you do as you change your karmic remedy. So even the thumbprint starts to change.
Wait a second. If you had the oracle in front of you right now, the Nadi Leaf Oracle, could you see the letters in this ancient Tamil writing actually change before your eyes?
This is another one that I consulted. This is called the Jiva Nadi. Now, there's a couple of other oracles in India. There's one set of these that you can ask about current situations, and the writing actually changes. It's a blank leaf, and the writing appears on it.
Have you witnessed that?
I didn't witness it, but I consulted it.
Okay.
And it gave me an equally interesting read. But my friend, who was introduced me to it, he had seen this, and another one called the Pothai, which is where they put a metal plate into a fire, and it will come out with the predictions in English. So my friend had witnessed that one, so I'm hoping to track that one down next. I want to go to India again, do another mystic journey to India, and find the Pothai and find the Jivanadi.
Because all right, well, we're not done with this. We're not done with this journey yet. We'll take a time out, come back, and continue to delve into the Nadi Leaf Oracle and the mystical journey to India with British psychic medium Craig Hamilton Parker. Here is Lady Ella and Louie taking us into the break with Dream a Little Dream on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T. And before we get back to our conversation with Craig Hamilton Parker, British psychic medium, and this remarkable mystical journey in India and the Nadi Leaf Oracle. Just a reminder, again, George Norrie coming to Salt Lake City Saturday, March the 10th, 5 to 8 p.m., and what a cast of remarkable experts he's bringing with him. Ancient technology expert Jason Martell, the man who died two times and lived to tell about it, Danian Brinkley. A ufologist, Nick Pope. George will sing a few songs with a live band. You can take part in a Q&A with each guest. And there'll be a meet and greet at following the show. Don't miss out. Tickets will go fast. And here's the box office number. Take this down. 801-355-ARTS. That's 801-355-2787. Or online tickets, artsaltlake.org. Sorry, artsaltlake.org. Artsaltlake.org. And then, very quickly, Saturday, April the 21st, George lands in Scottsdale, Arizona at the Virginia G. Piper Theater. And in tow will be spirit traveler Sonia Grace, astronomer, master of all things space, Dr. Sky Steve Cates. And they will end the evening with a UFO roundtable featuring some of the most respected people in ufology today, including Dr. Lynn Kitai from the Phoenix Lights, Melinda Leslie, Travis Walton, and John D'Souza. And again, tickets will go fast, so call the box office, 480-499-8587. This is for the Scottsdale event now. 480-499-8587. ScottsdaleArts.org. ScottsdaleArts.org to order tickets online. All right, back with one more go at Craig Hamilton Parker and the mystical journey to India right here on Coast to Coast AM. Craig Hamilton Parker, British psychic medium, and the website is psychics.co.uk, psychics.co.uk. I'm going to ask a real pedestrian question, Craig, and that is, how is it possible that everybody who seeks the oracle could have seven pages dedicated to them, their chapter in the oracle? How is that physically possible?
Well, there's thousands of these leaves. I mean, how is it possible to even... For a seer 5,000 years ago to see things like computers, see things like trains, like they describe a train, for example, a long carriage with lots of wheels on a track. Yeah, that's a train, you know, an iron bird that flies in the sky, an aeroplane, you know, the medium of light and sound, television and the internet, you know.
Right.
I mean, I can't begin to explain it. I mean, these leaves were so valuable in the past. They were kept in the temples and were kept underneath specific temples that had been built for the leaves. When the British Raj came over there, they destroyed a lot of the leaves, took all the leaves, took some off to the British Museum, and then sold some back to families that are now using the oracle sections of them. So this was a big tradition in India. It was, there must have been thousands of scribes working on it in its time. It's considered as one of the lost wonders of India. And the thing is, now people are going to be keen to say, oh, I'm going to go and find that Nadi oracle. I have to warn, though, because we live in what in India they call the age of Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. The oracle has been often corrupted, and most people out there doing the oracle are dodgy people that you must not part your money to. I only paid what I wanted to pay for the reading. I gave about $70, I think it was, for the reading, right? Which I thought was fair, you know, because it would cover their costs. But I didn't have to give anything. There's other oracles out there at the moment saying, oh, we'll give you, you can read your Nadi. And I looked at this one and said, $2,000, the reading. And I thought, no, see, that's corrupted. And even some of the ones that I've seen since have suddenly, Westers have come along, and one or two of them have gone down the route of, oh, we'll charge a lot of money for this, you know.
Right, right.
It's like chasing a living thing. I think of it as a guru. I think of it as a real person speaking to me from the ancient past.
Does the oracle care whether you're open to it or not? So, for example, if I was looking for the oracle and I wanted to find my chapter in the oracle, but the oracle, I'm talking about it as if it's a living thing, but if it perceived that I was closed-minded, would it reveal itself to me?
Yes. It would be... you can be as skeptical as you like. It will give you 100% answers, no matter how skeptical you are. Like I say, you only answer yes or no to the oracle, and it will just give exactly what's said on the leaf. As long as you've got a true reader, this is the problem, you see. So some of them, for example, will say, well, I won't tell them that bit about their death, or I'll gloss that up, or might add a few extra predictions in that are bad ones so I can make a bit more money out of this. You see, a corrupt reader can destroy the oracle. As long as you can find the pure one. And that took a bit of doing. And that's why I've had to use, you know, like the man that had been researching it for over 30 years, I described, and my friend who we met back in 1995, he was looking for it since then. You know, this is why most of it's kept secret still, and you have to really track it down. But if you can find it, people say to me, oh, tell me who do you recommend? I can't do that because it's so volatile, this thing. You have to find the correct one at the correct time in the correct place. But, you know, I do personal recommendations to take people there to show it to them, and I don't want any money for anything like that. I do it as a public service to people sometimes. But that's only when, you know, people I know face-to-face and have met, and people I've taken to have come across just as mind-boggling, even more mind-boggling things than I've described in my story here today.
Well, take us back to your journey then. After you met this yogi who sleeps in fire,
yep.
What happened next?
Well, because none of it had been planned in advance, we had to just follow the oracle. We ended up going all over southern India. We did about 2,000 miles, we worked it out. And most of the time, I didn't even know where I was a lot of the time. And I did various rituals, like I had to do a ritual to a homa, which is like a fire ceremony in which you throw all these fragrances onto a fire. It takes all day, and you throw buckets of water over you and things like this for cleansing, and all sorts of strange odd thing rituals and things like this that I did. But then one of the most important parts, the most emotionally important part to me was doing the charitable work, because the idea is that, you know, when you do a good act to somebody else, they have good thoughts about you. And those thoughts about you, this whole system is based on the idea that consciousness is a real living thing, that the Nadi itself is a living consciousness, and that we can change our destiny by having good thoughts coming towards us to help break a pattern of negative thoughts from previous lives. So when you do a charitable act, not only does it do good to the person, but it also does good to you at the same time because of the positive actions that creates. So I did a lot of charitable things, such as going around villages and feeding remote villages with food and things like that. And that was beautiful to do that. It was just so, you know, because charities, you know, you put money in charities, and they for every dollar you put in, I think 1 cent gets to the person who needs it, you know?
Right, the administration costs and the overhead.
I can put money into this, you know?
Right.
By just taking some food to villages. But then I gave one of the remedies that the oracle said was to give a cow to an old person, old couple, cow and a calf. So we bought a cow, we bought a calf, and that moment that I gave the rope to the tether of the cow to the old lady, it was just so, I cried, you know, because...
Yeah, you changed her life with that simple gift.
Yeah, I could feel it changing me, and I could feel it changing them, because it's like giving a person a pension. You know,
yes.
A cow's not just meat in India, it's not at all meat. It can give you a complete livelihood, a cow. It can sort you out the rest of your life. And that was beautiful to do. And we went also fed children in an asylum for young children. And they're all well-behaved. And that was another beautiful thing to do. It's so humbling. And I was thinking about my wife, Jane, you know, because as you said at the top of the show, that she'd been a psychiatric nurse in her time. And
yes.
I thought, it's faint, strange, that my life is now helping people with psychiatric problems too. And when you're putting that food on the plate, it's almost because I tuned in so much to India, I was so attuned. It was like I was in another world through this whole period, because I'd been to such holy places and holy mountains and holy caves. And when I when I was putting the food on, it was like it was changing me as it's helping them. It was like on a high level of consciousness these things happen, and people that take this journey in the same way seem to experience it like I did. You know, you step into another order of reality. You know,
right.
You've accepted this strange order of reality that's in the Nadi leaves.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, were you all in, for example, if the Nadi Oracle had instructed you to give everything you owned away, would you have?
I probably would have done that. I don't know. I was all in by the time I'd finished, because I found it so overwhelmingly spiritually transformative. Mm-hmm. And this is not just me talking myself into something. It's because I've experienced so many things as a medium through my life. I've seen physical mediumship type things happen. I've made people fall off their chair when I've given evidence to people. But this was in another order of reality. This was something that was happening on a deep level. And in fact, what it's mainly wanted to do, and my wife Jane feels the same, is maybe want to donate the rest of my life to doing spiritual things as a form of service to others. And that is really giving everything. So in actual fact, I suppose on one level, I'm not there yet, but I'm trying to, is to give everything to the idea of service to this higher energy, what some might call God.
Right. So what happened? You work your way through this journey, and you tick all the boxes. Okay, we've accomplished that. Next. So when do you know that you're done?
You never are done, because I might consult it again in the future, and the Oracle probably knows I will have consulted it again. I may never consult it again. They may not feel I need to. I think when are we done at all in this world, really? I mean, I talk about a mystic journey to India, but life itself is a journey to somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And when do we know we've got to the end of that journey? It's not just death. We know it's not just death, because we continue after death, and maybe we come back to this world again. So the journey seems to be endless. But the journey perhaps is done when we have become the journey, when we have entered into a state of becoming spiritually awake, of becoming self-realized. And that's where the journey goes from and to. And it's a journey from yourself to yourself, I think, in the end.
Right. I mean, it's internal more than anything, isn't it?
Well, it's internal, but also the more I look at this, because of the strange synchronicity of things, the way coincidences would happen and things like this on the trip, you know, I mean, things would happen exactly the right time, you know. I began to realize that the external world and the internal world are the same thing, because as changes were happening in me, things were happening in the external world around me. You know, I mean, we went to Mount Arunachana, and it had been closed for ages and ages, apparently. When we got to it, they opened the gate to let people in to go up Mount Arunachana again, because the path had been being redone for 6 months. I was the first one to step through. You know, I thought, well, that's
remarkable.
Little things
right.
Like that, all the time.
But we always tend to associate a mystical journey with places, you know, far-flung corners of the world. You mentioned India, or, you know, we're to find the meaning of life on some summit in Nepal. Who's to say it's not to be found in a pawn shop in Newark, New Jersey?
Absolutely. And here I am in a little suburb in the UK, and I'm just as where I was there as I am here, as it were, you know. The journey is from yourself to yourself. I mean, we don't, you know, it's the world... Are we passing through the world, or is the world passing through us, you know? Because everything is just a stream of consciousness, ultimately. And what we're experiencing out there and what we're experiencing inside ourselves are one and the same thing. So it doesn't matter where you are in the world. You know, you don't have to go to India. But for me, I needed to go to India to do those rituals, those remedies, to change my karma and to break the bond of previous lives. And that's what I wrote about in Mystic Journey to India, the book, and that's what I filmed when we went to India and did the rituals and put it on Amazon. The Mystic Journey to India is a journey, but it's a journey into yourself, into your own awakening. And that's really the message that of itself comes out of this story.
And the documentary available now on Amazon. Any plans for a feature film, like a not a fictionalized version, but more of a theatrical type version?
Well, we've been to Cannes and we have spoken to people because people got very interested in this, and we're hoping to be able to do something on a bigger scale. It's early stages, and who knows? The Oracle seems to point to things like that, strangely enough. But in a way, you kind of, I know in this world, you know, in America and England, we have to always be so ambitious, but it teaches you to kind of stop and let it happen, and it'll come on its own accord. And I'm hoping that, you know, the right thing will come along to help turn it into something that will take it to another scale. Because I'd like to, I mean, I've also explored northern India, and I found other oracles in India, like the Nadi. And I'd like to know a lot more about what they say about the future of the world, because I found a few things in there like that. And even in some of these Nadis, you know, there's even talk about other planets, you know, life on other planets. And I've not found that myself, but I've heard about this. And of course, once you get into this whole Indian mindset, there's perhaps a lot of fantasy there, but you keep finding all sorts of interesting paths to explore, to mysteries that are, you know, so mind-boggling.
Right, right.
Yeah, come on, Craig, come back to reality. You know?
I can hear it in your voice how passionate you are about this. I mean, you can't fake that. Although, you know, I was thinking while you were talking about destiny and so forth, you know, the next time my wife asks me to trim the hedges or cut the grass, maybe I'll tell her it's the Nadi Leaf Oracle. I've consulted it, and it's not in my destiny. So I don't know if she'll buy it or not. Very quickly.
Work is worship. See all actions as being so divine calling.
That's true. You know, that's true. I enjoy washing the dishes. I find it very contemplative.
To do that.
Well, I want to just very quickly in the time that remains, we just have a couple of minutes, but the titles of your book, some of them are very provocative. And one is What to Do When You Die. What should you do when you die, besides just lie there?
When you're dead, the book is the actual.
What to do when you're dead, yes.
That's my book about the afterlife. And, you know, it questions about what happens when we die. What is the reality? What is the world like over there, you know? Is it like this world? Is it a dreamlike lucid state? So I've drawn upon my experiences, plus the experiences people have near-death experiences, plus the traditional things, and brought it all together and tried to give us some understanding about what life is like, what time is life like, whether it's the same as this world, and whether we come back again.
So a bit of an instructional manual on how to navigate through the other side.
Partly. It looks at a lot of the questions about, you know, and the misconceptions about life after death, as I see it too, you know, and how do we get direct proof ourselves, you know? How can we prove it other than just dying, you know?
Right, right. In terms of the dream world, when we have visitations from people that have passed on, how do we differentiate between something that's just a dream and what is an actual visitation from that person from the other side?
Yeah, of course, that's always a different, that's the same with mediumship, which is a thought and spirit, and which is my own thoughts. And it's the same problem in the dream world. But the only, I've always noticed that, you know, if there's certain dreams that have a certain quality to them that is beyond what is a normal symbolic emotional dream, as it were. I mean, the holy men, for example, can meet you in your dreams. This is one of the things the oracles told me. He said, we'll give you instructions through your dreams. And I dream of the holy man that wrote the Nadi Oracle and tells me things. And those dreams are totally different to normal dreams. They're like being wide awake in a dream, lucid. And that's the same often when you get a contact from the spirit world. If a person wants to make a connection with you, it's often of a certain quality that is beyond the normal dream. And so, you know, because emotional dreams, a lot often when people, for example, when they dream of someone who's died, they often have a dream of like they've been divorced or something horrible, because it's like their feelings being expressed that they've let me go,
right.
I've been left alone. You know? But that's not a real dream of the person. That's an emotional, symbolic dream.
Craig, I've enjoyed this conversation immensely. Thank you so much for hanging out with me.
A great pleasure.
Psychics.co.uk. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyon, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Greg Bishop, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker, here in Toronto, Mike Ben Dixon, and Patrick O'Neill, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. This is Coast to Coast AM. Until tonight, so long for now.